Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Stephen Butler, the Executive Director of CNY Arts. The organization has been leading the Engage CNY initiative concerning arts and culture in the region, and a plan based on that work has recently been released. Stephen, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it was a little less than a year ago that we last talked, and you were still in the middle of your information gathering effort. So, first, let's do a quick refresher for our listeners. Give me a quick overview of CNY Arts as an organization.
CNY Arts is a regional arts council that's an arts service organization, and we function as a kind of a trade association for arts, culture, history, and heritage groups in the six counties that we are contracted by the state of New York to serve. And those include Oswego, Onondaga, Cortland, Oneida, Madison, and Herkimer.
Okay. And how are you funded?
We're funded through government funds, private donations, and also earned income, as well as corporate philanthropy.
And so what was the point of the Engage CNY initiative, and how did it go about trying to achieve that point?
The point of the Engage CNY initiative was to do a regional assessment of the six counties, and that was because the state of New York had given us three of those six counties were brand new to CNY Arts, where the state had said, would you come in and serve these counties? So we thought, let's do a regional assessment and find out what service really would look like there. And as long as we're going to do that, why not go full throttle and create a cultural plan?
Okay. And tell me a little bit about the process of the data collection. What kinds of data did you collect? How did you go about getting it?
We collected data from three sources: the general public, arts, culture, history, and heritage organizations, and individual artists. And we used a variety of mechanisms. There was a general public survey that was online, and there were hard copies of that as well in places we didn't think people were getting online. And there were versions of that in Spanish. We created a leadership advisory council of community leaders that we asked to help push the survey out in the six counties. And we incentivized the survey with gift cards to like dollar stores, gas stations, grocery stores, because we really wanted to get a wide breadth of the population, not necessarily vested stakeholders who tend to go to a lot of arts and cultural events anyway.
And so you did that. And my understanding is you also did some focus groups. Is that right?
We did at least 50 focus groups with over 500 stakeholders, and we did a large summit at the Hancock Airport, our regional airport, with a lot of community leaders, mayors, and departments of community planning elected officials to sort of look at all the data once we had pulled it together.
And how many people filled out surveys, and do you have any information from the surveys about whether you got a good demographic mix?
We do. Our universe is pretty widespread. We got, it ranges from people with earning less than $25,000 to people earning over $150,000. In the more major metropolitan areas such as Utica and Syracuse, the ethnic diversity was at about 8%. And we worked to achieve these goals. And we also received a lot of surveys from people that did not necessarily have a lot of higher education. And one of the ways we did that is we called it an arts and entertainment survey. We didn't want people to say, an arts survey, well, I don't participate in the arts and I'm not going to fill that out. So we called it arts and entertainment. And ultimately, we got over 7,000 responses, which for six counties is pretty remarkable.
So what was the most important thing that you learned from all this information, do you think?
Well, there are no silver bullets, that everything's going to be solved if we have this one brilliant strategy. I think the incredible response rate talks about the high level of interest in arts and entertainment in our region, and that's very gratifying. We came away with a couple of big, I think, theories or themes. One is that while over 80% of the public highly values arts and entertainment, and close to 60% feel that finding out information about how to get to arts and cultural offerings should be easy to find or is easy to find, when you say, well, how much do you really know about what's going on? Only 27% say, I really know a lot. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a disconnect there. And I think the other thing is, as you look at age and ethnicity and education, particularly, not so much income, you see disparities in how people value what's being presented in the six-county region as to how they rank it in terms of excellence. And I think there's opportunity for the arts and culture groups there as well to look at other kinds of programming.
Could you say a little bit more about that last point? What were some of those disparities that really caught your eye?
So perhaps, you know, if you look at white populations aggregately, over 20% felt that the arts and culture heritage offerings were excellent. But only 10% of those in ethnic minorities felt it was excellent. And then as you went down the line, good, okay, no opinion, bad, those percentages sort of inverted as well. So and that was true for younger people under 35, as well as people who had less to no higher education beyond high school.
Was there something in all of these findings that really surprised you, you weren't expecting to see?
The top priority listed by the arts and culture organizations that filled out their survey was that they want to collaboratively market. And that is not something I think we would have heard 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So that, yeah, that is interesting because it does seem like there would be a natural tendency to want to kind of differentiate from each other in this idea of competition, but they're seeing it differently though.
I think so. I think they're actually seeing the strength in their numbers. I would also say that remarkably, as we did research, we discovered that there are over 1,600 individual artists that file taxes saying that some of their income is derived through arts making. And we found over 700 websites of, I'll call them cultural entities, that are providing some kind of cultural offering in the six counties. That's quite a bit of cultural activity going on in our region.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Stephen Butler, Executive Director of CNY Arts, and we're talking about Engage CNY's regional cultural plan. One of the things that caught my eye in your press release was the finding that folks in the focus groups said that, or at least a lot of them, said that arts and culture create bridges between races and classes. We were talking about some of the demographic differences just a minute ago. That notion of creating bridges between classes and races doesn't always come to mind regarding all the arts. I mean, it wouldn't be the conclusion one would probably draw after attending a symphony, for example. So tell me more about those discussions, what you were taking from them.
Well, that's a very good question. And it goes back to the point that the survey was aspirational. Like, what do you think art should do? And I think actually now we've gotten a lot of information about, we now need to go back and say, and what do you think it's doing? But people did believe that arts and culture is a great bridge builder in terms of, you know, class and ethnicity. And we heard a lot of stories about people feeling somewhat excluded from what is being offered. And we heard a lot of stories of people saying that they did not feel that they knew where to go to find out what was being offered. So it sort of leads to a two-prong, I think, strategy, which is to increase awareness, but also to look at relevance in terms of what is being produced and how it can meet these aspirations.
Another thing that caught my eye in the release was the proposal coming out of the surveys and the focus groups that colleges and universities should become more involved in local cultural development. And that immediately made me think of Syracuse University because it appears to be scaling back on some of that, at least compared to its own recent past. There have been some early signals, I think, to that effect. Is that a source of concern for you?
Whenever we're talking about scaling back arts and culture, I am concerned. However, I would say that the arts and higher education programs were one of the subsets that actually came back to us during the process and said, we would like our own summit, and there's a big conversation we'd like to have. They came up with those participating came up with a rather daunting agenda and a real enthusiastic response to keep meeting and working on some of the issue you've just raised, which is how do we keep art in the colleges and universities, make it accessible to the community, and, you know, bolster those activities.
And was there one finding that worried you the most, greatest concern that came out of this?
My greatest concern was that a third of those surveyed told us that they had no marketing dollars and did not have marketing staff in their operation. And So how do you, you know, I don't want to, we call these cultural offerings, you know, if you were maybe you might refer to them as product, but how do you market your offerings or your product if you don't have the resources or the staff to make that happen? And I think it speaks to how much work we need to do to build the capacity of this industry.
Jumping ahead a bit then, was there a thought coming out of that that maybe something that your organization could do or another organization could do could provide kind of a pooled set of resources for people who want to market but they don't have that resource in-house?
Well, as you may recall from our last conversation, we do have a social marketing system called go2cnyarts.org, which people can get to. And it's for those in arts and culture, it's an absolutely free calendar to get themselves listed in the directory and put their events onto this calendar. And we will use that tool as well as, I think, pointing out that we know that there's 1,600 artists and over 700 entities, many of whom we have not gotten to yet, to be on that calendar.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Stephen Butler, Executive Director of CNY Arts. The organization has recently released a regional plan for arts and culture in Central New York. So now you've released this cultural plan based on all this data that you've gathered that we've discussed earlier. What are the main points of the plan?
Well, I think the main – one of the first thrusts is to increase the size of the network. You know, Rob Simpson from Center State was our keynote at this summit in February. And one of the points that he made was that, you know, collectively between the individual artists and these arts, culture, and heritage organizations, we are a pretty important industry to upstate New York because we don't have the 50,000 employees at a factory anymore. So if we collectively can start working as an industry, then so much the better for us. And that starts with coordination. So we have to gather, sort of marshal these forces together to begin creating these networks so that this work can begin to be done.
And what's going to keep this from being just a plan? I mean, what's going to put teeth in the plan to make it get traction?
Well, you know, implementation requires resources. So, and I think that when plans are developed, there's a sort of feeling in the air of like, well, let's wait and see what they do. We've already begun to raise some funds for pieces of the plan. The Higher Education Summit, some dollars have come in to begin to coordinate those 17 colleges and universities, those that participated. And we also have money from the Regional Economic Development Council to advertise the social marketing system in six counties as well as Cayuga. So the plan in some ways is underway. But I think as we build resources, I think others will come back to the table who are very engaged in this process and say, well, you know what? Specifically to my locality, this would be a good project. Can you help get this to happen? It certainly dovetails with the goals you outlined in the plan.
Was there any conversation at the summit or at some other stage with some of the bigger stakeholders, the larger players in the region, about the possibility of this becoming, in a sense, the trademark for the region? In other words, that this area begins to brand itself in part on the arts and culture in a way, say, that maybe Burlington, Vermont, you know, has done or some other cities have done.
I think that was very much part of the conversation. And there were a lot of folks from the Chambers of Commerce and Convention and Visitors Bureaus that were attending these focus groups or participating as leadership advisors on this council. And that do believe that the rich array of cultural opportunities is part of the rebranding that the region should engage in for cultural tourism, as well as a tool to recruit, you know, a workforce and companies to Central New York.
Now, it always is the case that if a plan is really a plan, it's going to give priority to some things, more priority to some things, less priority to other things that may have been being considered. So are there aspects of this region's cultural life that got more or less priority than one might have thought going in before you gathered all this information?
I'm not sure if I'm going to answer this question directly, but one thing that kept blurbling back up was K-12 art in education.
Hmm. Say more about that.
Well, I think focus groups, whether they were school teachers or arts groups or the general public, had a concern about the discrepancies of arts programming in K through 12. That's very erratic by district to district of what's available. And certainly those of us in the industry feel that, you know, these are the audiences of tomorrow. They're also the artists of tomorrow. And you begin to have those transformative experiences when you're a child if you're exposed to arts and culture. And I think that from the industry side, a lot of people recognize the value of arts education as creating analytical sets, teamwork, ability to work as a team, and just a sense of creativity. So that kept blurbling back up and into the plan, but did not necessarily no one has quite had an action step that said this is how we will solve this.
And any time that you've talked about resources, and any time anyone talks about investing more in the arts, it necessarily brings up this issue of trade-offs against other kinds of public investments. Did the surveys or the focus groups or any of this process give us any new ways to think about that? We talked about the rebranding just a few minutes ago. Is there anything else that might relate to thinking about if you do this, you're not going to do this other thing outside of arts and culture that the city or the region needs just as much or more?
Well, no, we didn't have as those kinds of conversations. The kinds of conversations we did have with the mayors, and we tried to meet with every mayor in the six counties and county offices of economic and community development, was how could arts and culture help us revitalize our downtowns, reinfuse our main streets, whether rural, suburban, or urban? And is there a way to create opportunities for young people who are in the arts to stay through, you know, micro business loans or creating makerspace or art studios with living space that is affordable or, you know, subsidized in some way, so that when they're coming out of these arts programs, they stay in the area and they're very innovative and entrepreneurial and are creating, you know, wonderful art.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is Stephen Butler from CNY Arts. A couple questions for you about specific cultural assets in the area now. The last time you were on the program, we talked about the symphony, and a lot has happened with the symphony since. So as someone who's concerned about arts in the area, have you been pleased with how things have turned out so far?
I've been specifically around Symphoria. I've been very pleased with their development. They're clearly still, I would say, a startup organization, but have met a lot of their benchmarks in terms of subscription sales and individual donations. And they're playing a full season, and they're employing people, and the reviews are generally good. And I think that they've come an amazing distance in less than 2 years. They have a wonderful new executive director, Catherine Underhill. They've just hired a musical director. So that's a real success story, you know, as of right now.
Do you have any worries at this point for them going forward?
Well, I have worries for all of our large arts, culture, and heritage institutions, because I think the rebound, if you want to call it that, coming out of the recession has, you know, definitely affected everyone's capacity, where I think, you know, budgets are more constrained, and that statistic about how few had marketing dollars or marketing staff, which is not necessarily true of the larger institutions, but just that kind of dynamic, I think, affects all of those working in the industry.
And your organization, I think, has been given a role in this rebirthing process for the symphony. Could you say a little bit about that?
Well, at the time the former symphony went bankrupt, The musical instruments had been collateralized in a loan, and M&T Bank graciously returned those to the community through a restricted gift to CNY Arts so that they would always be available. And so when the new symphony formed, these instruments are there. As well, we were asked by the county to some extent to work in a think tank and help with the startup of the symphony, and we work with the symphony to this day, and each quarter go over and report to the county legislature as to how they're doing, you know, as part of the agreement for their funding.
And another cultural asset that has been in the news a lot in the last year, the Everson Art Museum, with its financial struggles in particular. How do you see that recent history, and how do you see that playing out in the future?
The Everson has a tremendous number of assets. I was sorry that the exhibits had to be canceled, and that too might have been somewhat around a conversation. I wasn't privy to those innermost conversations about marketing, whether they could sell enough tickets to afford those exhibits. A lot of this goes back to marketing, outreach, and promotion. They had received, I think, a year ago, a rather large, a loose grant, I think $250,000 or close to $250,000, to digitize the ceramics collection, which is extraordinary. It is the cornerstone of the museum. And I think they're mounting a new exhibit about that. And I think that those ceramics being available through a digital process, that they can be lent out. I think I'd like to hear more about that from them. I think this is the part of the wave of their future. And I think it will put them in good stead as an income generator and interest in their permanent collections.
And when you said loose grant, we're talking L-U-C-E, right?
Yes.
Okay, as in the foundation. Well, before I ask you the three questions at the end, let me ask one final quick question. Where can our listeners go to read this plan?
If you go to www.cnyarts.org, there is a button on the first page of that website that says Engage CNY, and you just push that and it will take you to the full plan as well as a lot of snapshots and a plethora of data.
Well, let me ask the three questions, and as we sometimes do with folks who have already been on the program, I'd like you to answer them from a different perspective than your own life. So not your own life, but in this case, from the perspective of the life of the arts in central New York. So the first question, what's the title of the chapter of life for the arts in this region?
I think this chapter is called Rebound.
Second, what is the worst trait of the arts culture here?
That there is a silver bullet. If I just had that $50,000 more in my budget, everything would be solved.
And finally, what achievement of the arts culture here has surprised you the most?
I think that Central New York arts and culture groups have been so remarkably flexible. When they turned over their mailing list to begin this research, several years ago through the initiative to develop and engage audiences in Syracuse, which is what this plan sprung from, I saw a great sea change as they focus their programming on, to a certain extent, on what is culturally viable and exciting. I think that's a big shift in their mindset. And I've just – their resiliency and their adaptability just continue to amaze me.
That was Stephen Butler. Stephen, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Research assistance was provided by Brooke Weinstein. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. Visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations for more information.